Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
Sitting next to me, yeah. Oh, get you next to me, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Denver Halsey? Y'all like Denver? Denver Halsey is a 23-year-old singer-songwriter from Alabama. He has CDs for sale after the show, and more can be found at denverhalsey.com. All right, well, welcome to Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at the Mobile Convention Center in beautiful downtown Mobile, Alabama, with the Southern Sustainable Agricultural Working Group's annual conference. Tales from the South is presented by Timonos Publishing Company, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. What do y'all think about our set back here? Y'all like our set? These Delta screen doors with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection and are for sale. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and V.L. at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight, our storytellers are all small farmers and attendees at this conference and tell tales of farming. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Renee McCracken tries to save her chickens from a coyote and will end the night with Shiloh Avery realizing that calamity on a farm can come in threes. But let's start the night here at Tales from the South with Micah Anderson as he tries to escape his farming destiny in Farming Fire.
I was 14 years old. I knew everything there was to know about farming. I had grown up on my family's farm in Haskell, Oklahoma, and done everything there was to do on the farm. Planted gardens, milked and vaccinated cows, castrated calves and pigs, killed and cleaned chickens, herded cows on horseback, seen pigs and calves born, planted row crops, used a tractor to rake and bale hay, haul hay, even helped put out a fire that got away from a neighbor's farm. I was grown, and I thought it was about time to start thinking about what I was going to do once I graduated high school. Only problem was that there were only four boys left still at home in 1974, and the eldest, Claudius, was graduating high school. I felt a heavier load fall on me since I would be the oldest since Claudius left home. As soon as I graduated, I thought I was going to leave home because farming had wore me out. As a freshman in high school, I wanted to be hip and fit with the city kids. I wasn't fitting in school. I wore glasses. I was smart. The teachers liked me. But I wasn't able to play football or basketball because I lived 6 miles out of town and couldn't make practices. But I wanted the girls to think I was hip. The football players, they had patches and popularity and girls. I thought I wanted some of that. While I was 14, cocky, on the farm, that felt really good. What I really wanted was to fit in with the cool city boys. We ran a productive farm operation with a deep belief in God, family, and hard work. As a young couple, Mama and Daddy started their marriage with lots of love, a definite farm plan, a couple of cows, a few chickens. By the time I came along, they had purchased a new house, 80 acres, two tractors. We grew, processed, and preserved all the food we ate, including beef, pork, chicken, fruits, and vegetables. I remember one winter when I was around 8 years old, Daddy was cutting wood. Daddy cut all the wood because it was only one chainsaw. Claude was 3 years older than me, and he was showing off trying to split the wood. The wood wasn't cutting good for Claude. Our neighbor, Mr. Maxshan, he came along with his raggedy old axe. He would walk around the wood. Claude and I was watching Mr. Maxshan trying to figure out what he was doing. And then he rose his axe up. It barely hit the wood. Pop, it split. We would realize he was looking at the grain of the wood. He knew if he hit the grain just right, it would split easy. Now, Daddy cut more wood than we could haul, we could stack. There was something about the winding of the chainsaw that kept him going. Daddy bought a German-engineered steel chainsaw, and he seemed to be possessed. We could not stack wood fast enough as he cut it. Daddy cut wood for three families, Grandma, Grandpa, our family, and Mr. and Mrs. Maxshan. Mr. Maxshan uses wisdom to split his wood, not just his strength. The more we moved, the better we felt. We worked as a smooth oil machine, and it felt like I was a part of something big and important. Most people nowadays don't know that you pick cotton before you go to the fair. When I was 5 years old, there was no kindergarten in Haskell, Oklahoma, but I went to school every day at the cotton field school. After we pulled our cotton, Mr. Maxshan, who didn't have any kids, came by and spoke with Daddy and took me with my croaker sack to his farm to help him pull his cotton. A croaker sack is a brown woven sack used to hold feed. Many people repurpose the sack to make clothes out of it. Anyway, I used my croaker sack to put my cotton in. Being only 5 years old, I could only pull 20, 25 pounds at a time. I don't remember, but I was told that I may have pulled a bale of cotton that year. I really liked when Mr. Maxshan would come and get me and brag about his little helper. I know I wasn't the first to graduate from the cotton field school, but I was really proud of my work that fall. We farmed our own land and grandmother's land, plus we farmed several hundred acres that we rented. I remember one evening, I was plowing. I came home a little early to do homework. I decided I wasn't going to farm the rest of my life. Daddy came in the house and got on to me and told me I was going to have to stay with it a little longer because we were running behind. By then, we had finally been able to afford a John Deere. So I went back out and got on the John Deere, but I was angry. Luckily, I'd helped Daddy build the engine on that old John Deere, and I just knew how much it would take. So I gave it all it would take. And when it got dark that night, plowing in the creek bottom, I got scared. I started singing a hymn, "Walk with me, Lord." The harder I drove that old deer, the darker it got. I didn't notice until it got dark, but there was a blaze of fire coming out of the exhaust pipe. The harder I drove, the brighter the fire. Then I wasn't afraid anymore, still singing, "Walk with me, Lord." I realized that night I had pushed the tractor to its limits. I had pushed myself to the limit, but I had to keep going. Like in the Old Testament, when they brought the very best to the altar for a sacrifice, no matter how dark the situation, the fire will light will come. You just have to keep plowing. Since I had been driving tractors since I was a young boy, by high school, I wanted to prove to the city boys that I knew how to do something they didn't know how to do, because I was really good at that. One of the first things I did was enroll in a tractor driving contest. My instructor gave me the rules and the information that I needed to know about the contest, and he told me to practice, but I didn't practice. I'm like, practice? I thought practice. Contrary to what my instructor told me, I did not need to practice driving a tractor. I already knew how. Besides that, I was afraid to tell my dad because we didn't drive tractors. We drove tractors for a purpose, and I didn't think he would let me play on a tractor, wasting valuable propane. During the Muskogee Fair, I entered the contest, a tractor driving obstacle course. That was one thing I didn't know how to do. I choked and failed to place an event. I was furious. That increased my resolve to leave the farm. After high school, I took up auto body at Muskogee Vo-Tech and finished auto body and shop management at Oklahoma State Tech in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, because I thought I had had enough of this farming thing. I'm done with farming forever. It's ironic how life works. After 13 years of auto body work, I wanted to teach my son some things about agriculture. So I bought 5 acres with a house and a tractor. My dad gave me some old equipment. I bought a plow, and we worked a couple of acres and planted watermelon, cantaloupe, tomatoes, greens, etc. We had a bumper crop the first year. That made my son excited. So we kept planting every year. My son's excitement about farming rekindled old memories of pride, fire, and old John Deere in the creek bottom. Once I got off the farm, started fixing cars, it took me a while to realize I missed farming. But the good Lord brought me right back to it. Only problem now is that I still have to fix cars to earn enough money to farm.
Micah Anderson is the Plasticulture Program Coordinator in the Marketing Department at the Oklahoma Department of Agriculture. Next on Tales from the South, Renee McCracken takes control of the predator situation and learns a lesson in how Lucky Bob the Rooster got his name.
I grew up on a small farm in East Texas. Now that has definitely provided me what I believe, at least, is the true grit and the determination that I needed not only to succeed in life, which is important, but to a Texan, it's even better that I have amassed a great selection of backwoods parables, is what I'll call them today, that could easily rival that of Aesop's fables. Now, one of my favorite such stories, it's true, I'm sad to say, was acquired while my family and I were working on a registered cattle ranch near a little place called Troop, Texas. Now, in that area, I was just the ranch hand's wife, and my primary occupation was that of domestic goddess and mother of 3 little girls. So those of you that have children know, with the younger ones still in diapers, there was a lot more domestic, more than goddess at the time. So now that I have long held the belief that how you raise a child when it is young, so they will not depart from it when they are grown. So even though there were plenty of chores to handle, just caring for the children and the house and the ladies, you know, I believed that having a backyard flock of chickens was the best way not only to feed my children and instruct them, but to guide and mold my young girls into good young ladies with that kind of responsibility. So we went down to the local feed store and prepared to pick out our new little egg-producing machines. One on our hired man home, that was our position, sat on a hill just about 300 yards above a creek where the cattle would dutifully wake us every morning. There was a small shed that was just perfect to be transformed into the perfect little house, and because every farm needs one, I brought pullets and a few roosters. My girls just loved the chickens and were a great help. They helped to check on them and feed them and pet them every day until finally most of them managed to make it till they just start laying. The roosters, I kept 3 of the 5, to serve out their posts, because everything has a job. They were to guide the hens, protect the flock, and of course everybody knows, crow on command every time the wind blew. Now, these were 3 large roosters. They were a Rhode Island Red, one of my favorites, a Black Astrolabe, and a White Plymouth Rock, because we believed in diversity on our farm. Now, of course, no sooner than the hens began to lay, the coyotes discovered that I was serving fresh chicken and started dropping by about every morning at dawn to belly up to the chicken bar. Now, being the country girl that my daddy raised, I was not about to stand for the senseless killing of my hens. My husband, who often left before dawn and returned long after the sun set, was not going to add that to his routine to protect my chickens every morning. And even the dog that we had at the time, a little rat terrier dog, it would have been more of a snack than a deterrent to the coyotes. So with a few instructions, a little target practice, my husband armed me with a .22 rifle to take control of the situation. So at the crack of dawn each morning, with rifle in hand and usually dressed in my nightgown, ladies, sorry, I would let the chickens out to free range every morning. Sometimes I know the neighbors would get an eyeful as I chased down and fired off a shot or two at the coyotes that decided that our chickens just might be worth the risk. Now, it was on such a morning that I came out to find that the coop's pen door had unfortunately not been latched the night before. Chickens were already off, scratching and doing their thing in the backyard, foraging for bugs, and to my surprise and theirs, there was a coyote just waiting to take his pick from my flock. Now, the bravest of them all was my large white Plymouth Rock rooster. He was standing guard between the coyote and the hens in true hero fashion. Now, feathers were fluffled, hackles were up. He was trying to appear as large as he possibly could to back that villainous brute down. The coyote, however, was not deterred one bit. But the rooster's bravery, nor my loud shooting or occasional shouting, seemed to stop him. Instead, he slinked slowly up, snatched up my poor little rooster to make a feast of him. Then in a flash, he ran off and down, back towards the creek and the heifer pasture. There I was, out of breath, completely frustrated, in tears that once again I had been able to stop the marauding coyotes. Suddenly, I couldn't believe what I saw next. Down at the creek, a white fluffy chicken began to stagger back up the hill. Apparently, what I couldn't do, the black Brangus heifers that were in that pen, they were a little bit more successful in convincing the coyote to drop that rooster. So he dropped him, and the coyote, I'm sure, run off to return another day. And so there he was, this poor little white rooster, just having been plucked from the jaws of death, now looks up at 25 black Brangus heifers surrounding him. Now, those of you that are country folks, don't get ahead of me. There are a few things on the farm that are more curious, hyper, crazy, whatever you want to say, than a group of young heifers. That's why we put them all together, right? I have seen something as simple as a plastic Walmart sack blow across the pasture and cause sheer panic. The herd of heifers stampeded 300 yards of fence at that time before they settled down. So I'm not sure what they really thought this little white fluff of whirling around on the ground was, but this is the first time I have ever seen or since about 25 Brangus heifers playing what appeared to be, my very best guess is soccer, maybe, with a terrified poor little rooster. Poor little rooster was snorted, kicked, thrown up in the air several times and whirled around in a cloud of dust until he finally landed in a briar patch. Now, I'm not sure if I really thought that my little rooster ever had a chance to still be living, but I thought if nothing else, I was going to prevent those coyotes from finishing off what he was, and I was going to give him the burial that he deserved. So I made the long trek out to the briar patch, still in my nightgown, eased up to it, peeked down into the center. And because I have a master's degree in poultry science and know how to talk to chickens, I said, "Chick, chick, are you okay?" And he replied, "Bawk, bawk." Which, for those of you that do not speak chicken, it went, "Oh my God, what happened?" So, of course, I scooped him up and brought him back to the coop, where he spent the rest of the week recovering from his exploits. And from that day forward, he would be referred to only as Lucky Bob the Rooster. Now, my girls and I, we learned a lesson that day. Heroes can come in all shapes and sizes on the farm. And one more, the heart of a rooster can rival that of the hunger of an instinct of a coyote. Thank you.
Originally from Hallsville, Texas, Renee McCracken is the Director of Agriculture at Northeast Texas Community College. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, it's just one thing after another on Shiloh Avery's farm in Three is the Magic Number.
So you've heard it on Schoolhouse Rocks, three is the magic number. The week that I learned exactly how three is the magic number began with my husband's famous last words. Hey guys, you want to see something crazy? Followed by the deep huff of igniting fumes that makes your ears prick for the thud of a meteor hitting the ground. It was premium gas. You see, sometimes I take my job as farm mechanic a little too seriously. I was reading something handed to me in my community college small engine repair class that said I should be putting the highest grade gasoline in all my farm vehicles. So I went down to Hammond Sitgo and bought me some. It went in everything. The weed eaters, the four-wheeler, the gator, everything. Boy, did I fancy myself a brilliant farm mechanic. For about a week. After which, both weed eaters quit at exactly the same time. Bad gas, said the actual professional mechanic. Then the gator began acting up, so naturally, I issued the same diagnosis. The problem with the gator is, well, it holds a whole mess of gas. 5 gallons, to be exact. But we had to have a working gator, so I siphoned out all 5 gallons, which, being of an environmental background, but also being a cheap farmer, I installed in a 5-gallon plastic bucket. Mostly because I had no idea how to properly dispose of bad gas, I figured it would just hang around in said bucket in perpetuity. My husband, however, had a different idea. I'll just get rid of this, he said vaguely. What? Now? I asked. Yep, did you have a better plan? Well, no, I guess I didn't, so I turned back toward the tinkering without another thought. What I don't know doesn't hurt me. Or perhaps, well... My head was down when I heard the yell. I glanced up quickly and saw him diving away from the fire. I looked at Lacey and rolled my eyes, more Jason antics, and I went back to tinkering. I could use a little help here, called Jason from the ground 20 feet from the now blazing fire. Huh? Panic, scramble, rush to his aid. What to do? Find the burn cream, wet towels, everybody running around, more wet towels, bring the truck around, forget about the blazing fire. Is that skin? Somebody produced the first aid kit packet of burn cream. I don't think that's gonna cut it. When you make your whole living in just 26 weeks of the year, and with Jason spending the weekend in the luxury accommodations of the hospital burn center, not to mention a so far unspecified period of recovery, there's little choice left but to cry for help. And cry for help I did. You might have even called it a howl. It was heard all the way up in Michigan and responded to, dutifully, by my mom and dad, who dropped all their retirement activities, of which there are quite a surprising amount, and rushed down to help whirl me out. They arrived Sunday evening armed with their respective skill sets. My mom, with a career in the medical world ready to nurse, and my dad, at a bit of a loss, habitually donned his mowing clothes. After all, we had just purchased a brand spanking new, expensive, 58-inch deck zero-turn walk-behind mower that had been used just once as a trial, and because it came with a generously full tank from the dealer, had managed to escape the whole bad gas caper. Now, nursing is, to put it lightly, not my strong point. The whole concept of changing bandages was enough to make me run the other way, and I despise running. So I was definitely dragging my mother, with her years of nursing experience, with me to pick Jason up from the hospital. Evidently, I take after my father, because he chose to stay at the farm chasing around that brand spanking new, expensive, 58-inch deck zero-turn walk-behind mower instead of coming with us to pick up the invalid. So I showed him where the gas was and where the mowing priorities were and headed off with my mother to Winston-Salem to pick up Jason. As it turns out, it's no simple thing to pick somebody up from the hospital. There are prescriptions to fill, bandages to buy, instructions to listen to, forms to sign, etc. Minutes turned into hours, and we're finally pulling into the driveway, famished and exhausted, toting our Chinese takeout. There was no way Jason was willing to step inside any eating establishment looking like the crispy critter that he was. Everyone but my dad, turns out he hates Chinese food, is scarfing down lo mein and rice. "So," he says slowly, "that gas can you showed me had a yellow funnel attached to it, right?" "Mm-hmm," I replied with my mouth full. "And it was a 5-gallon container?" "Mm-hmm," still scarfing. "Why?" There was a pause that might have seemed pregnant if everyone hadn't been so concentrated on calming growling bellies. "And it was over by the tractor, right?" "No. No, over by where we parked the gator. Why?" I asked with a growing sense of calamity. "That gas wouldn't be red, would it?" "No, that would be the off-road diesel. You didn't put that in it, did you?" I asked, Chinese food all but forgotten. "Well, but you stopped when you saw it was red, right?" "No, I thought it might be a little strange that it was red, but I kept putting it in," he says, averting his eyes. "But you didn't run it with that in it, did you?" "Well, yeah." "What happened? Did it run?" "Well, first it started smoking like crazy." "And you cut it off then, as soon as it started smoking?" "Well, no. I thought something might be amiss, but I thought it might just be some oil from the factory burning off or something, so I kept going until it quit running." "Oh." Now, over the years, I've observed my dad stifle his reactions to other people's stupidity so well that even I, his own daughter, wasn't exactly sure how angry he was. So perhaps this was a good time to mimic my dear old dad. Of course, usually when my father excelled at this stifling, he was not just finishing a weekend that kicked off with his spouse lighting themselves on fire and then scrambling to get the farm work done without his spouse and throwing himself on the mercy of others for help, but excel he did. And I was determined to repay him that favor on the off chance that sometimes that stupidity was my own. "Well, I'm sure we can siphon it out of there and it will be fine. We can check the manual, call the dealer, but I'm sure it's fine," I said in my best dad's not upset voice. So I got up Tuesday morning, our busiest day on the farm, raring to go. I delegated jobs like a president and headed down to meet my bright-eyed and bushy-tailed crew. "What's wrong?" I asked them immediately, based on the looks on their faces. "The chickens." "Oh." Somehow, in all the chaos of Chinese food and diesel disasters and burn care instruction, I managed to forget to close up the chicken house. Three. Things in threes. There were feathers everywhere. The electric fence reduced to a tripping hazard. Nary a chicken was seen among the evidence of massacre. Although it was one of those off chances that the stupidity was my own, it's surprisingly easy to stifle anger and frustration at one's own stupidity. While it may appear that calamity comes in threes, the magic of three is that, as it turns out, a person can light themselves on fire and be back, more or less fully recovered in less than 3 weeks, and that one can, in fact, run diesel in a gas engine without any permanent damage. And sometimes the few chickens who escape a traumatic massacre wander back home after a few days. But even though I now know to expect magic in threes, you better believe I'll never buy premium gas again.
Along with her husband, Jason, Shiloh Avery owns and operates Tumbling Shoals Farm, a 4-acre certified organic vegetable operation in Northwest North Carolina. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at the Mobile, Alabama Convention Center. And thank you to ULR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by Temenos Publishing Company. And our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, ULR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, Urban Garden Montessori, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
My name is Denver. I'm going to be singing some songs for y'all. Here's a little song I wrote. It's called My Shot of Love. Thought about you today as I walked into the house. I heard a sweet voice call my name. It was a pretty girl with my t-shirt on, sitting there on the couch, asking me about my day. Then I woke up smiling. It was just another hopeful dream. No, I ain't there yet, but man, it's killing me. I just want a baby in my arms and some good home cooking. Girl that I married is so good looking. Everything around me, simple as a summer breeze. Oh, I sure can't complain, cause I've been so blessed. But I'm ready for the next step, ready for the rest. Every day I just take it like it comes. Oh, but I sure can't wait till I get my shot of love. Now some people think it takes more than one, but I can't wait to show them how it's done. Loving you is gonna be my whole world, baby. Oh, I can't wait to know your name, and the waiting is driving me insane. I know I ain't there yet, but I'm counting down the days till I got a baby in my arms and some good home cooking. Girl that I married is so good looking. Everything around me, simple as a summer breeze. Oh, I sure can't complain, cause I've been so blessed. But I'm ready for the next step, ready for the rest. Every day I just take it like it comes. Oh, but I sure can't wait till I get my shot of love. I just want a baby in my arms, yeah, yeah, yeah. See, the girl that I married is so good looking, yeah, yeah. A baby in my arms and some good home cooking. Girl that I married is so good looking. Everything around me, simple as a summer breeze. Oh, I sure can't complain, cause I've been so blessed. But I'm ready for the next step, ready for the rest. Every day I just take it like it comes. Oh, but I sure can't wait till I give my shot. Sure can't wait till I give my, oh, I sure can't wait till I give my shot of love. My shot of love, yeah.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at infraredstudioproductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.